Welcome to the Fastest 5 Minutes, presented by Kroll & Moring. We are your co-hosts for this edition, Peter Ayer and Yuan Zhou, bringing you a bi-weekly summary of significant government contracts, legal and regulatory developments that no government contracts lawyer or executive should be without. And I'm going to turn it to Yuan for an update on the FAR.
Right, thanks, Peter. On April 1st, the FAR Council issued a final rule updating the FAR to add Part 40 on information security and supply chain security. Now, the intent is for FAR Part 40 to consolidate the various information security and supply chain security regulations that are currently dispersed across multiple parts of the FAR, as well as to house any new related regulations that are issued. Now, while this first action doesn't implement any new requirements, separate rulemakings will follow to relocate those existing supply chain security policies and procedures to the new FAR Part 40. And ultimately, it's going to include regulations concerning prohibitions, exclusions, supply chain risk information sharing, safeguarding information, and supply chain security requirements. So for example, the Section 889 prohibition and policies will be placed in Part 40, as well as provisions implementing FASCA, the exclusion and removal orders. Now, note that the supply chain related issues that are not considered to be related to securities, like labor restrictions or human trafficking, will not be in Part 40 and will continue to be covered in other parts of the FAR. And overall, these actions just suggest that regulations on information security and supply chain will continue to be issued in the years to come. Peter?
Great. Definitely something to watch and an indication that there is more to come in this new part of the FAR. Next up is a notice of proposed rulemaking. This is from CISA, the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency. And this notice of proposed rulemaking details how companies will have to comply with the Cyber Incident Reportings for Critical Infrastructure Act of 2022. So the statute was issued. Now CISA is starting to look at the proposed rulemaking. The notice addresses practical and policy issues related to implementation of the reporting requirements, and the final rule is expected to be published in late 2025. The proposed rule would require covered entities, those that are defined as an entity in a critical infrastructure sector, to submit a report to CISA upon various triggers. So a few of those triggers are experiencing a covered cyber incident, making a ransom payment, another entity makes a ransom payment on its behalf, or acquiring substantial new or different information after submitting a previous report. The proposed rule lays out the reporting deadlines by event type. So for example, covered entities must report certain types of incidents within 72 hours after reasonable belief that an incident has occurred, and there must be a report within 24 hours after making a ransomware payment. Those are just a couple of examples. The proposed regulations set forth the proposed manner and form of reporting, which includes a web-based incident reporting form that would be available on CISA's website. There are also some other potential avenues being contemplated. Finally, the proposed rule would provide CISA with administrative authorities to compel reporting and tools to require compliance with the regulation if the government learns that a covered entity experienced a substantial cyber incident, but there's no corresponding report. CISA also would have the authority to issue subpoenas and penalties for noncompliance with the rule. Now back to Yuan for an update on a Court of Federal Claims protest.
Thanks, Peter. On April 2nd, the Court of Federal Claims denied contractor AEG's pre-award protest of a DLA procurement which alleged that DLA's inadvertent disclosure of source selection information to one offeror in the procurement competitively prejudiced other offerors, and the agency failed to properly mitigate the disclosure. So here's what happened. In the underlying procurement, DLA awarded the contract to AEG. The incumbent, KHI, then filed a protest at GAO, prompting DLA corrective action. Now, ultimately, as part of its corrective action, DLA allowed AEG and KHI to submit revised proposals. Now, at the request of AEG, which argued that KHI as the incumbent had an unfair competitive advantage given its access to more current purchasing data, the contracting officer issued an amendment to which both offerors would be provided historical sales data. Now, when the government attempted to send the historical sales data to KHI, it mistakenly forwarded an internal agency memo containing source selection information. The KO realized her mistake, and she notified DLA counsel and the military officer overseeing the program. She also called KHI to request that all individuals who received the sensitive information delete the email, and KHI confirmed deletion. The agency also conducted an investigation and determined that the disclosure was not made knowingly or intentionally, and moreover, the agency concluded that to the extent purposeful information was disclosed, it did not provide KHI with a competitive advantage, generally because the information was likely to be inferred through common sense and understanding of normal business practices. Now, subsequently, AEG filed a pre-award protest of the scope of the corrected action at GAO and a supplemental protest at GAO regarding the agency's PIA investigation. GAO denied both of these protests. Upon DLA's request for revised proposals from both offerors, AEG then protested to COFSI, and it argued that DLA made an unauthorized disclosure of that competitively useful information, and it failed to properly mitigate the effects resulting in competitive prejudice. AEG further argued that DLA failed to review the disclosure holistically based on the totality of the information available to KHI because simply deleting the sensitive information did not prevent KHI from recalling, using, or benefiting from the unauthorized disclosure. Now, COFSI ultimately found that the DLA properly investigated the inadvertent disclosure, and it reasonably concluded that KHI did not receive an unfair competitive advantage. Instead, COFSI agreed that KHI's deletion of that internal memo was reasonable mitigation and no further measures were necessary. And it also disagreed that DLA failed to conduct a holistic review because AEG used, open quote, extra record speculation, end quote, about how a competitor might use that information. So COFSI denied the protest, finding that the disclosure was harmless and did not result in competitive harm or an unfair competitive advantage. Peter?
Great. Thank you so much to everyone for joining us. We will wrap up this edition. This has been the Fastest 5 Minutes, brought to you by Kroll & Morey. See you again in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, I can be reached at 202-624-2807, and Yuan can be reached at 202-624-2666. Thanks for joining.
The Fastest 5 Minutes podcast is brought to you by Kroll & Morey LLP. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you enjoy our show, please leave us a review. You can find more information at kroll.com/govconpodcast.